the word of the Lord. This idea of examination is the reason last week we gave out tokens, because in the Scottish church, the idea was, at first at least, that the elders would go out into the congregation and examine the lifestyle of the members. And only then, if they would not be bringing condemnation upon themselves, were they given a token, so that when they came to receive communion, a token was your ticket of admittance. And if you lacked a token, then it was simply the church protecting you from yourselves until you repented. After a while, it became so burdensome on the elders to go out and examine everybody personally that over time they gradually shifted to this self-examination, which we now practice in the church. But the idea is, in taking communion seriously, we ought to examine ourselves in advance and not take it lightly as if merely a function of the church. So now on to John Knox. Knox was born in 1505, so just over 500 years ago. He lived east of Edinburgh. We know little about his family other than his father was a merchant. We know only his mother's maiden name and not much about his early life. His mother died soon after Knox was becoming established. We know that within 20 or 30 years, it's inexact, Knox must have gone to Glasgow or to St. Andrews to school, because he was a priest in the Catholic Church, obviously. And we know that 30 to 40 years later, he described himself as a minister of the sacred altar in the Diocese of St. Andrews, and a notary by apostolic authority. Yet rather than parish duties, as he approached midlife, Knox became a tutor of the children of prominent lords, who were significantly influenced by the Reformation. And Knox traveled with these children, teaching them about what he believed and the parents believed to be sound doctrine. We don't know exactly when Knox was converted, but we know that he traveled with an influential man named George Wishart, an early reformer in Scotland. And though he was in danger, Wishart traveled all over preaching reformed doctrine. And Knox was his bodyguard, carrying a two-handed sword to protect him from the authorities or anyone who might protest. In 1545, Wishart was arrested, and Knox was prepared to follow him into captivity, but Wishart persuaded him otherwise. "Nay," he said, "return to your barons, your children, and God bless you. One is sufficient for a sacrifice." And a reminder of those difficult days, he was shortly thereafter burned at the stake. To avoid arrest, Knox, now a fugitive, returned to tutoring, but traveled, and he kept moving from place to place so the authorities could be avoided. Then the cardinal who had ordered Wishart's execution was murdered by assassins in the castle at Edinburgh. And thereafter, supporters of the Reformation took the castle and controlled it, and Knox's benefactors asked that he return there, thinking it might be safe. He returned, but when he did, French troops, having been called in to help the local Catholics, took control of the castle, and Knox was arrested. It was difficult because he was placed in a galley and forced to row by the French. They returned to France and wintered over in one of the rivers there. Knox was chained to his seat and for 19 months hardly able to change posture, receiving, like the others, a whipping if he did not comply. A sign of his determination can be seen when, on the galley, they were presented with a picture of the Virgin Mary and asked to kiss it for veneration. Probably Knox, but certainly one of his crew members, when he was pressed in the face by this image, seized it and threw it overboard, saying, "Let Our Lady save herself now. She is light, let her learn to swim." That gives you the tone of the resistance that Knox and others presented. 19 months later, Knox was released and he went to England now. You can imagine the back and forth in the English crown between those who were Catholic and those who were Protestant, and that influenced Scotland, and all the countries on the continent were likewise back and forth, because whoever was in political power determined the religion of the nation. Knox was a powerful preacher, and so in England he proved himself. He spoke, as it said, with the thunder of a prophet and with the feeling that could bring a tear from a glass eye. Within 2 years, he was one of the royal chaplains for the king, and he worked there on the Book of Common Worship, protesting over the fact that the habit was at the time kneeling for the for communion, which seemed to Knox to be like idolatry. Knox moved about until Mary Tudor reestablished Roman Catholicism in England, and then he went to Geneva, and there he met John Calvin. Knox was now highly political, certainly in the way he was perceived by those who were against him, but he was increasingly unwilling to compromise. He stayed there, and then 8 years after he rode away from Edinburgh, he returned to Scotland. But he was an outlaw, and the authorities wished to lock him up. But he was so popular by now that the crowds swelled and his hearing was called off. He went back to Geneva, and there he had some peaceful years and said of Calvin's work in Geneva, "I neither fear nor am I ashamed to say that Geneva under Calvin is the most perfect school of Christ that ever was on earth since the days of the apostles. In other places, I confess Christ to be truly preached, but in manner and religion, so seriously reformed, I have not yet seen the like in any other place." Calvin's emphasis, and now Knox's, was on personal piety and society morality. Knox, you'll be interested in this, preached 3 sermons a week, each lasting over 2 hours. I shall be slightly more brief than that today. He went back to Edinburgh again. You see the travels like Paul. His return caused riots, and the cathedral there was destroyed along with other things. French troops were called on behalf of the Catholics and English on behalf of the Scots. And so in the end, there was a truce, but only a slight one, and civil war would follow for a long time. What we know is in these days, the Scots were called together. Knox and 5 other men named John came together and in 4 days wrote a confession of faith that has lasted to today. He also worked on the Book of Discipline about the organization of the church. You know that congregations in the Presbyterian Church beginning then could call their own pastors, that bishops were replaced by superintendents, now presbytery executives and synod executives, and funding, different from ours, was to be from the landed, and parishes were not for members of the church, but for people who lived in a general area. For example, when I went to Scotland one summer to take the place of a Scottish minister, I did weddings and funerals simply for people who lived in the neighborhood and who then called upon the church in need. Knox was, as I have said, much like the Apostle Paul. Once converted, his perception of God and God's will was changed dramatically. Knox, in his demands upon society and upon himself, showed courage, endured suffering, traveled widely, wrote, and showed absolute devotion. In all of these, he was a man for his time, and his legacy in the Presbyterian Church is honored today when you and I speak truth with boldness in the public square, and then privately live out the teachings of Jesus in every circumstance of our life. Recalling his travels and the broad world where Christ